We're continuing on in the narrative lectionary. The readings are a bit longer than with our regular Revised Standard lectionary, but don't think of them as long readings from the Bible. This is story. This is narrative. This is showing the long arc of God's movement in history among God's people. And as I share the story, and it's in your mind's eye, try not to put Charlton Heston in there, or Cecil B. DeMille, or any cast of thousands. This is a more intimate story. On the third new moon, after the Israelites had gone out of the land of Egypt, on that very day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. They had journeyed from Rephidim, entered the wilderness of Sinai, and camped in the wilderness. Israel camped there in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God. The Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the Israelites, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession out of all the peoples. Indeed, the whole earth is mine, but you shall be for me a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the Israelites." So Moses came, summoned the elders of the people, and set before them all these words that the Lord had commanded him. "I am Yahweh, your God, who brought you out of the house of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquities of the parents to the third and the fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments." By the way, that deserves its own sermon. We'll get to that sometime. "You shall not make wrongful use of the name of Yahweh, your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses God's name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work. You, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your town. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife or male or female slave or ox or donkey or anything else that belongs to your neighbor." The so-called Ten Commandments have a public relations problem. What's the first thing that pops up in your mind when you hear Ten Commandments?
Arkansas.
What's that?
Arkansas.
Arkansas. Yes, Arkansas comes up about second for me, yeah. I thought it was Alabama. Alabama, yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, I hear Ten Commandments, I'm like, rules, more things on top of me. I have enough responsibility, enough things going on in my life. Now I've got 10 divine rules telling me what I can't do. The Ten Commandments need a PR fixer. to mop up all the negativity that comes with the Ten Commandments. A generation ago, in response to the super-ego-like aspects of the Ten Commandments, Ted Turner, you remember Ted Turner? He came up with an alternative he called the Ten Voluntary Suggestions. And I don't remember what they were. The Ten Commandments have a PR problem. When the Ten Commandments makes the news, it's because a politician has broken 8 or 9 of them multiple times that week. Or an Alabama judge ignores the Constitution and puts a Ten Commandments memorial on public land at taxpayer expense just to thumb his nose at his political opponents. This nonsense is going to get you bad press. The Ten Commandments have a PR problem. But it's not the fault of Moses. It's not the fault of the Ten Commandments themselves. It's not God's fault. It's how our culture seeks to treat the Ten Commandments. And honestly, the way we treat the Ten Commandments is kind of like how a toddler treats his mom when she tells him not to run with scissors or drink bleach or play in traffic. One responds with a scowl and a pout and a petulant, "You're not the boss of me." So I want us to take a look at the Ten Commandments, all right? Now, last week we did a lot of heavy-duty exegetical stuff and a lot of Hebrew. We're going to do a little bit of Hebrew and a little bit of a South African language I can't remember the name of, but we'll get there in a minute. First thing is, commandment is a really lousy translation of the Hebrew word mitzvah, or in plural, mitzvot. Nowadays, when someone does a mitzvah, what does that mean?
Celebration.
Well, it's a good deed. It's a nice thing to do. It's something that you're doing for the benefit of someone else without expecting anything back in return. It's a mitzvah. The 10 mitzvot that we read today are sort of a top 10 list of the 613 mitzvot that are found in the Torah, which is also badly translated. How Torah gets translated as law, Paul's fault, because he used the word law to talk about the Torah. It's probably better translated as instruction, as guidance. That's what it is there for. But what were the 10 commandments for? Why are those the top 10 that Moses brings down to the people? Exodus 19 gives us why we're doing this. In there, Yahweh says to Moses, "I have loved you, I have chosen you, I have liberated you from slavery." In the poetic language of Exodus, "I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. I took you away from slavery, where you were a commodity, and I made you a people, my people. And here are 10 ways that you can continue to live as people, as full human beings, by treating each other as full human beings. 10 ways to be in right relationship with me, in right relationship with creation, right relationship with each other." I'm going to paraphrase the Ten Commandments real fast. We shall be in right relationship. You don't need other small g gods. You don't need to worship stuff and things you make. I am reality. I am sufficient. Don't use me or my name as a commodity to bring pain or blame on another. Treat time and treat rest as a precious gift. You were slaves where time was a commodity weaponized against you. Use time as a blessing. And then there's some basic ways of how not to be a dreadful human being to other human beings. Honor your parents. I love how it is put. Honor your parents so that you may live long in the land here. It's like, don't get your parents really cranky because boom, a backhand, you are done, you are done. Honor your parents. Don't kill anyone. That's a major, that's basic rule. Don't get in bed with another person's beloved. Don't take their stuff. Don't lie about your neighbor. Don't go coveting your neighbor's stuff. It's not rocket science. It's a basic top 10 list. The first batch of them is how to be in right relationship with God and with time, creation, and then with our fellow human beings. A basic top 10 list of how to be a decent human being. How to have a healthy relationship with your fellow human beings and with the God who liberated you from slavery in Egypt. Egypt was not just Yul Brynner. Egypt was the largest, biggest, baddest religious, military, industrial complex on the planet. And it treated everyone and everything as a commodity to increase the power and prestige and honor and military might of the Pharaoh. So now you have been liberated. You can now be fully human and not a commodity, not a cog, not a piece of property for someone else's use. You are human. You are fully human. And the people around you are fully human. And you can treat them as such. But we live in a culture today that looks a lot like ancient Egypt under Pharaoh. We too live in the biggest, baddest, religio-military-industrial complex on the planet, and we are treated as cogs in it for the benefit and the prestige and the power of someone else. Pharaoh was a radical narcissist. He claimed ultimate power, he demanded ultimate allegiance, and everything and everybody was a tool, an it to be utilized for his will and whim and way. And we have a culture today that says that everyone can be a radical narcissist. Everyone is invited to treat everybody around them as an it, as a thing for your own use. Just off the top of my head, I came up with 12 commandments for our culture today. Look out for number one. You deserve it. Anything and anyone can be commodified. Accumulate stuff, use people, and toss either away when they get old or wrinkled or boring or broken or unfashionable. Here's one from a few years ago. If it feels good, do it. Profits before people. The golden rule. The one who has the gold makes the rules. Might makes right. In the last few weeks, it's been boys will be boys. Ethics is for suckers. The one who dies with the most toys wins. That is our culture. It is Egypt. It is Pharaoh. What is the commonality in there of all those rules besides enabling you to be your own selfish pig or run for national political office? The commonality is that it is inviting us to treat people as things. And I've said this before in ancient sermons. Torah, instructions, guidance from Hebrew scripture, is not about creating what our culture calls the good life. It's about creating a life that is good. And those are profoundly different things. It's about creating, or more accurately, co-creating with God and with our fellow human beings, a life that is good, is sustainable, is life-enhancing. It's about creating relationships that honor the other as, I'm going to use a grammar term here, honoring the other as subject rather than object. I'll talk about that in a minute. Now that we are free of Pharaoh, the Ten Commandments say, let's not turn around and be Pharaoh over someone else. A mid-century or early 20th century rabbi, philosopher, Martin Buber, talked about God creating people to be subjects, fully human people, not objects, things that are designed to be manipulated, utilized, and used. You call an object an it. You call a subject thou. Now thou is a one, it's not just a King James word meaning you, but it was an intimate form of you. Among the Shaker community and the Quaker communities 100 years ago, husbands and wives called each other thou. You was for regular folk, but your beloved was thou. We think it's quaint now, but I think we should take that back up. I think we should call our honey thou. I'm going to get all philosophical on you for a second, okay? I'm quoting from David Bryant. Buber's main proposition is that we may address existence in two ways, that of the I toward an it, toward an object that is separate in itself, which we either use or experience, and that of I toward thou, in which we move into existence in a relationship without bounds. For Buber, all existence is encounter, and the fundamental way we encounter the world is through the primary relationship I-it. And that inevitably leads to treating other people as things, means to your own end. And that is the way towards spiritual bankruptcy. But Bryant writes, there is a second primary relational word, I-thou, an encounter at the deepest level with humanity, nature, art, and existence, an awareness of our oneness with all that is. Buber writes, so long as the heaven of thou is spread out over me, the winds of causality cower at my heels, and the whirlpool of fate stays its course. In other words, we are at last viewing the cosmos with profound wonder at the deepest respect. When we see creation as thou, as we view the people around us as thou, and most deeply the author of all of it as thou, we will not lose our wonder at the everyday miracles that is the person that just cut us off in traffic. I'm going to give you another hard word. I think I talked about this about 10 years ago. There's a word that comes from the Nguni language from southern Africa and was popularized by Desmond Tutu back during the Truth and Reconciliation Commission after the fall of apartheid. And that word unfortunately got borrowed to be an open source computer language. And that's how, when you Google it now, that's what comes up. But the word is Ubuntu. And Desmond Tutu describes Ubuntu as meaning my humanity is caught up inextricably in your humanity. A person is a person through other persons. Ayn Rand's head would implode if she ever read that out loud. I am a person through other persons. A person with Ubuntu, Tutu says, is open and available to others, affirming of others, does not feel threatened that others are able and good, for he or she has a proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that he or she belongs to a greater whole. In Buddhism, that is seeing the Buddha nature in another, that divine spark. In Christian language, it's seeing the face of Christ in the face of another human being. That is Ubuntu. I don't have to feel bad or less than because this person is talented and smart and sexy and wonderful. is okay. I may not be those things, but I know I'm a child of God. And that makes me whole. And I can enjoy their being all those things and celebrate those things because we are both children of God, and I can experience that through that person, and they can experience that through me, and we can experience it through community, nature, art, music, all of it. Now, Ubuntu sounds like a really philosophical abstraction, but it is not. When it hit the ground, it was in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, where the authors and instigators of the most heinous racial government and rule were brought to trial. And if that happened anywhere else except where Ubuntu was part of the vocabulary, the people who were formerly underneath were now on top, and they would squish the former people on top. They would put them in jail. They would send them away, whatever. Under Ubuntu and under Tutu's brilliant work, a former chief of police who tortured a person would be in a room to meet with the person they tortured or whose husband they killed and would hear the story and would respond to it, hearing it as a human being and not an opposition leader. This was a human being. And they would hear it as a human being. They would offer their confession, their pain as a human being. And then the other could offer forgiveness as a human being. Only those who did not participate in the Truth and Reconciliation program were ever jailed. The vast majority of folks who tortured, killed, oppressed the majority black population did not go to prison, but were integrated back into the culture, a new culture, a new beginning, a new creation. Now, South Africa has not been perfect by any wild stretch of the imagination, but it was not a disaster. It was not a humanitarian disaster. Because Ubuntu allowed people to see each other as thou. I and thou. This person isn't just white. This person isn't just a police officer. This person isn't just a neo-Nazi. This person isn't just black or white or gay or straight or woodchuck or flatlander or Republican or Democrat or gay or straight or trans or any of the flavors, any of the categories that we have. It is simply, you are fully human and I am fully human. You are a child of God and I am a child of God. And that's enough. I can't use you like a pawn or a machine or a cog. And if I do, I'm not only devaluing you as a human being, I'm devaluing me because I'm devaluing. That is what the Ten Commandments is about. It's not a bunch of superego rules to keep you from having a good time. It's about seeing, valuing, celebrating the full humanity and the full divinity of everyone we encounter. So here's the thing I want you to do for the next 5 minutes. Are you ready? You got a top 10 list in the Ten Commandments of how it is that we treat each other as fully human or honor creation. But if you were in charge and you needed to come up with an 11th, what would it be? So we have two very Charlton Heston-y tablets here. And I put two because everyone I talked to last night was saying, I have some really great snarky answers. So if you have snarky answers, put them on the left, get that out of your system, and then put a serious one on the right. What would you have as an 11th commandment to help us see and live out the full humanity of another, or creation, or God. Take a few minutes and fill that out. We will collect that during the offertory. And we'll put them up somewhere so we can take a look next week. In your bulletin, besides the Matthew reading that I completely skipped over, there's some notes from an article by Greg Ron, and I didn't. These are not the categories I had, but he has a good context for the Ten Commandments here under takeaway notes, so you can do with that as you will. If you want to be doing some study of the Ten Commandments this week, this might be a good way to put things into perspective. The other word that mitzvah can be translated is simply word. The 10 words is one way to translate the 10 commandments. And that reminds me that in John's gospel, that is precisely how Jesus is described, as word. Word made flesh, that which is incorporeal become corporeal. God's love made visible, touchable. God's love walking, sharing, loving, suffering, being. That loaf and cup in front of us today is a reminder of what Jesus came to be, what he came to bring us, and how we're called to live with one another. Word made flesh, come to us. We're called to be flesh made word.